Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host today, Belinda Ellsworth, and I have got a really special guest with us today. I have Matt Browning with me. He is a podcast host, a master trainer of NLP, which is Neuro-Linguistic Programming, and the best-selling author of a new book, The Firebox Principle, The Seven Drives That Fuel Every Entrepreneur. He speaks all over the world, from U.S. to Australia, filmed a movie with Brian Tracy and Bob Proctor, and consults with Fortune 100 companies such as U.S. Bank, John McAfee, New York Life, the YMCA, and others. Matt is an avid motorcycle rider, church pastor, and rock climber. Wow. Welcome to our show, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me, Belinda. Super excited to be here. Let's jump in.
Oh, let's do. So why don't we just start out, jump right in, fill us in with some of the gaps of your bio, and tell us a little bit more about yourself, and more importantly, your journey of what got you where you are today.
You know, so I've been really blessed to really live kind of a life by design. I've been an entrepreneur for 16 years, and I started off in real estate working with these two brothers when I was 18. I left high school fairly early, found out how to make a lot of money really quickly, and by 21, 22, I thought I was like on top of the world. You know, I was running my own business at 22, self-made millionaire at 25, and just crushing life, so to speak. And the only problem is, of course, there wasn't a lot of fulfillment in that. And it's interesting. A lot of people find that later in life. And I was really, really blessed and grateful that at 25, I was like on this midlife crisis almost. And I made the mistake. I went to a live seminar with Tony Robbins, and I love this guy. I watched him transforming lives and helping people shift how they thought. And I just thought to myself, gosh, like, that's important. I want to learn how to do that. And if I turned out that behind what Tony Robbins does is he was an NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming trainer. So I was like, I better learn that. And he kind of invented life coaching. And I said, I better learn that. And I went on in this journey just to figure out how to help people change lives. And for the next 10 years, ups and downs, but I went after a life of being a life coach, being a speaker, having no idea how to do this, but I knew that I wanted to impact people. And, you know, it took me in a big up. It took me in a big down. I actually lost over $1.5 million because I quit focusing on making money and I started focusing on purpose and I started focusing on my dream and being able to really transform people. And it took a good 3 years to rebound and realize that, you know, now I'm really blessed. I get to live in this place where what I do for a living is something I love. I help people when I'm doing it. And at the same time, you can also do a pretty darn good living from it too. So it took a while to make that hybrid that I know a lot of people talk about in entrepreneurship today. But that's really what the last decade and a half has looked like in a nutshell.
That's great. You know, I appreciate you saying that though, because I really do believe that, especially with social media, and you see all these stories of, I quit my job and I went online, I started this program, and they make it sound like, and voila, here I am making seven figures in my first online launch. And I know from doing it for 25 years, like, well, that probably didn't happen just like that, my friend. But I think the rest of the world looks in and says, wow, what's wrong with me? Would you not agree with that to some degree?
When we see people on social media, when we see gurus, experts, innovators, whatever you want to call them, it's easy to see the overnight success that took 15 years. And yep. Because I don't go on social media every day talking about the journey. I do, right? But it's like, we don't talk about the journey. Here's a snapshot of, here's my life, or here's me speaking at this prestigious place, or here's this new thing that happened. And you don't see, I don't show you the cheesy, lame Courtyard Marriott in Seattle when I had four people at my seventh seminar. You know, 13 years, I don't show that picture necessarily. And I think it's easy to miss that. But yep. The truth is, every one of us, if we can focus on entrepreneurship at the slow burn as well as the fast, you know, we have to be able to light the match and the candle. And if we're only going after the match, so to speak, right, the fast burn, it's going to burn out. And I've watched a lot of people come after I started and go. while I'm still here, and I'm sure you've seen the same thing. Mm-hmm. So if anything, it's like, let's go after that slow burn where we're building something that's quality that will last, and watching what the future looks like as well as the present.
That's a really great analogy, really great way to put it. So I love that. Well, tell us a little bit now how the business has shaped your lifestyle today.
You know, when I started off, I had a dream, and I didn't tell you this quite before we started taping, but, you know, I had this dream of, like, I want to travel around the world and get paid for it. Be careful what you wish for.
Right.
So a couple years in, I had my big break in Australia. I might talk about that later. And I got to speak at this big event, and I had all these students come on to a new workshop I was presenting. And within 6 months, because the messaging and the tools and what I was delivering in NLP was apparently good enough and people liked it, that all of a sudden I'm booked. And I sold, you know, people to go to this training in Melbourne, Australia. And then some people made that one, some people couldn't. So I had to put on another one 3 months later. And then when I put on that one, there was probably an advanced training after that. And then there was an introductory training. And before you know it, within a year, I am putting on multi-day workshops, 3-day to 6-day workshops in 18 cities over 4 countries, all within a year's time span. During that time, I put on about an average of 35 multi-day workshops a year, just to put that in perspective. There's only 52 weeks in the year. And I was flying. You know, I'd land in Australia for 6 weeks and I'd put on 4 weekend seminars and then 2 5-day trainings back to back. And that's in a 6-week period. And then wow. I'd fly back home to the US and I'd put on 2 weekends and then 2 advanced courses, and I'd be home for 4 weeks and fly back again and then hit New Zealand, and then I'd put on a retreat in Fiji, and I was living the life that I wished I could live, you know? Mm-hmm. Looking back, I thought, man, I can travel and live my life's purpose. It's amazing. But then I had this moment when my body broke down. And I realized I was living, I say that it was like being a rock star, except for without the rock or the star. It was just the travel schedule. And after a while, the flights and the hotels and the early mornings and the late nights started catching up. And my immune system started like crashing, essentially. I don't know what was happening. But I found myself after one seminar, it was one of the biggest moments of my life, because I was crying literally at how much impact we made. We put on this huge event. Everyone, no one left. At the end of the 3 days, nobody would leave. It was so great. And I also made more money than I ever made in my life daily. It was $250,000 in a day from that one day. Way more than I ever done in real estate. And I thought, this is the epitome. I'm creating the income that I know that I deserve because I want to do good with it, right, in the world. And I'm huge in philanthropy. And at the same time, I was impacting lives. And I went backstage and the crew had to find me curled up in a fetal position. And I'm sobbing, and I'm not sad, but my body just almost stopped working. And it took a little while to recover. It took 3 years to really recover fully. So that was a moment when I said, I got to change what this dream really is. Remember earlier I said, be careful what you wish for. Mm-hmm. Be careful what your goals are. Every goal that you have that's positive also has consequences that come with it. Some good, some bad, but they're consequences nonetheless. And one of the consequences was, I want to travel the world and get paid. Well, now I have to be on the road constantly. So I reevaluated. And today, it took a good few years to do that, but I pulled out from all the international speaking, and I only put on workshops in California, which is wonderful. I put on speaking workshops, personal development workshops. I do some media podcasting. I launched my own podcast last year, and now that's in the charts in iTunes and syndicated on Chicago radio.
Oh,
and
great.
It's amazing. And I'm really blessed by it again. That's taken off. But what's cool is now I get to reach people, but I'm in the basement in Grand Rapids, Michigan right now while it snows outside and I'm warm inside talking to you. And I get to do my podcast. And then I fly out and do some TV and some radio media. I'll be flying to LA for radio next week. And then I get to put on workshops. But nowadays I put on about 5 workshops a year, not 35. So that's how the business has transformed over time. The synopsis is, I hustled really hard early on and put myself out there in every situation possible. Then over years and experience, I'm talking 7, 8, 9 years, I slowed down and started to carve out and guide a little more of what the lifestyle I really wanted. I'm married. I've been my wife for 10 years. I have a 7, almost 8-year-old son named Val. He's awesome. I get to participate and help them with homeschool a couple of days a week, in between my wife does. And, you know, and we get to help out in our church and be leaders there. And I get to take the time to do the other things in life I want, not just my business. So long answer to a short question, but it's shaped and changed over time. And I think we always need to do that.
We do need to always do that. And I do think that's the important thing. You did some really great big nuggets there, and that is, like, be careful what you wish for. But it's also just because all that happens doesn't mean, like, I think people get stuck in this, well, this is what I really wanted, and now I have it. Now I got to live with it. And it really isn't. It can morph. It can twist. It can change. It can be completely different than where you started.
And look, you brought it into existence. You can change right. it into a new existence. Why not?
I know. And I think people get stuck right there. I've heard that all the time. I've heard people say, be careful what you wish for. And then, but because they just stayed. And you can look at it and say, wow, I need to be more clear about, you know, what, and when you wish for it, you don't really know what that looks like. You don't know what the, if everything goes really, really well, what's the outcome of that going to be? I know my business certainly has shifted and changed over the years. And a lot of times it comes with a great idea. And then that great idea morphs into something completely different and unexpected. Nevertheless, it's pretty wonderful. So you have to be open for that as well.
I think too few people, there's an old biblical principle that I really love, believe in, and follow. It's called counting the cost. And Jesus of Nazareth, he talked about in one of his gospels about what builder would start building a building without first counting the cost, setting a budget, knowing what the investment's going to be. And I think when we get into, especially in the personal development world, and I'm sure you relate to this in a lot of ways, or you see people doing this, you get really excited, inspired. I can do anything. It's all possibility thinking, which is so good, right? Because we want to get out of negative, stuck thinking and open possibilities. But when you do that, we have to look at both sides. I really, really believe and go, okay, I want to start a new business. Awesome. Let's count the cost. So this is going to give me more freedom eventually, or this is going to allow me to dive into what I believe I'm here for, and I get to contribute, and that's great. And I get to make my income. That's awesome. What's the cost? Well, initially, maybe I start working 50, 60 hours a week, so I'm going to have less family time. I'm going to have less vacations in the beginning. Maybe, you know, I have to get a little more stringent. I have to give up sleeping in, even though that's what I love as an entrepreneur, sleeping in. Maybe I got to give that up so I can still wake up early. Oh, I'm giving up my late nights. So now you have this balanced look on what you're wanting to achieve, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do I want to achieve? Well, I want these goals, and what am I willing to sacrifice? To me, off topic but on topic, I think sacrifice and discipline are two of the resource words that we seldom use in entrepreneurship and personal development. What are we willing to sacrifice or give up in order to get the more important, maybe more long-term goal? And are we willing to discipline ourselves? Again, to not always, you know, if you want to have a great fitness, you might discipline yourself, say, I'm not going to eat that donut because I want to have the six-pack. And you basically have a choice in front of you. That's all discipline is. Every day as an entrepreneur, I have a choice. Which one do I want to do? Do I want to sleep in, or do I want to get that extra client? Do I, you know, pick and choose? And if we look at life and businesses, picking and choosing great choices, everything we have and every result is always a result of our choices. There isn't anything that happens by default. Everything I have, I could have chosen something different, but I chose this. If we remember that we are what we choose, we'll be able to go a long way and take control of our life.
That's great. So what do you think, or what have you identified as a couple of your really great skill sets that have helped you on this success journey?
You know, I think I probably roundabout actually answered it with the discipline. I think that's been so important to me, and I already explained that. But the second one is probably a pastoral nature. And I didn't realize this until I also, in addition to business, my wife and I have gotten into volunteer ministry quite a bit too, spiritually. And you know, we're both very pastoral, and to me what that means is pastor comes from, it's synonymous with the word shepherd, and shepherd as a metaphor is the shepherd who takes care of the flock. The shepherd always smells like sheep. They're amongst their people. They're taking care of people. And I didn't realize it early on, but looking back at my journey, I've always sort of been wired like this, very pastorally, shepherdly wired, and it means I'm a natural encourager, and I'm naturally wanting to, you know, to look at people, take care of people. So when I see someone, whatever it is, I'm always curious, you know, what is it about you? What do you need? Where are you in life? It's not about me, it's about them. And that's helped me a lot as a natural encourager. So whether it's building a team in the company, like I don't remember the last time I did a Craigslist ad or an outsourced HR hire. I haven't put an ad in, I think, over 10 years. Every single person on the company team, and we have several people, you know, on the team, whether they're full-time employees, full-time contractors, or part-time people, every single person I can point to being built up where they came in maybe as a student or client. They maybe volunteered with us for a little while, and then I said, hey, here's an opportunity. But it was because I was willing to kind of pastor, coach, encourage along the way, right? I was there with the people, and they felt that. So you always have to give something up, and what I would give is my time and my energy and my focus to people. So when I do that, in turn, there's always reciprocity where we begin taking care of each other. So in business, like I just don't believe in that, like, business is business. No, business is personal. It's not, what do they say in the classic 80s action movies? It's not personal. It's just business. But yeah, right. It is. Right? Business is personal. And so I would look at people that way. So I've been able to build a paid team. Everyone in the company has all been built up and encouraged over time, and we have relationship there. And then I've done quite a lot of work actually with volunteers. I've had hundreds of volunteers, interns, people that would volunteer at live events, because I'm always looking at, I'm not saying, hey, who wants to come help me for free? It's like, that's not the scenario, right? That's not what a volunteer is. Volunteers are people who see value in contributing and being around what you've built, and they see the chance to get blessed as much as they're going to bless you. So over the years, again, I've had hundreds of volunteers. So I'm always looking at, what do they need? What do they get out of this? Who is this person and what do they want? So maybe they're volunteering at an event, let's say, and you know, I'm going to take a minute, maybe 2 minutes on a break, to just stop and say, hey, how are you doing today? Oh, what did you think about that last section? And they'll say, oh man, hearing it the second time, I got this new distinction and I want to know about that. And what happens is they leave feeling fed, right? They leave feeling full. So it's great with building teams, paid, great with volunteers, and then great with community. You know, a lot of my NLP programs, we have a program called NLP Mastery Membership. And, you know, it's a monthly membership where people are around a virtual community, a live community. There's ongoing coaching together, ongoing training together. But it's really about that community family element. And it wouldn't be there if there wasn't that natural encouragement and pastoral element. So how do you apply this to you? Find out what one of your strengths is, what one of your resources is. If you have a natural bent towards something, bring that as a resource into the community and into the business you're building. When I realized that I was higher pastoral than other things, I might show up 5 minutes late to something. I might forget to text somebody back next week. You know, that's my bad. I'm not great at admin. I'm working on that. But I don't make that my strength. I don't make that the core principle of my business. The core principle is taking care of people, because that's what I'm really good at. So find out what you're good at doing and do that.
Great. So share with us one of your great accomplishments or something that you're quite proud of.
This whole year, I'm genuinely proud of this. And I've actually struggled, Belinda. I love to find out if people relate to it or not. But I've struggled with the balance of being proud and being prideful. Mm-hmm. And for me, the distinction I made this year is really important, because this year I had a lot of spotlight on me. I'm doing a lot of national radio, like real, you know, AM, FM radio. I'm flying out next week to do two live in Los Angeles station with millions of reach. And then I'm flying right over to Florida for a podcast conference. My podcast has hit the charts in iTunes 6-7 months ago, and it stayed there in management and marketing. It's called The Driven Entrepreneur, cheap plug. But you know, like I have my, this stuff is starting to get highlighted and spotlighted, and then it made the radio. And then I had the chance, I've been on, I think, 6 different television programs, morning shows, over the last 7 or 8 months. And between the radio and the TV and the iTunes and the syndication, in addition to the live events, that's been a very bizarre thing to me. Because I'm not a prideful person, and I've had to figure out, why am I, like, this is a good thing, and I actually need to tout that. You know, I got invited to speak at NASDAQ in Times Square, New York City. They had my face, 75 feet tall, on the Jumbotron, right? 7 stories tall, right in the middle of Times Square. And I had to be able to look at that, and this might seem weird, but I think it's important to talk about. I had to look at that, a 75 foot tall picture of me, and go, well, I know I don't have ego, and I know I don't have pride, but I have struggled with it And I want to walk in life, in a business, in a very humble way. But I can't ignore when I tell people about that. They go, wow, that was amazing. Can you show me how to get some of this exposure? So it fills up and helps my business to be able to talk about those things, but talk about it from a humble way. So I realize my answer is I'm very proud of all that I've been doing in media and been asked to do in the last year. But the answer is I've learned to be proud of how hard I've worked, but not prideful of the result, because it's not me. And again, just my personal opinion, all the blessing comes from God. So I think the accomplishments are His, but the hard work, the hustle, the blood, sweat, and tears, that is me. That's me co-laboring, making it happen. Now, I was at my son's a school conference thing a while back, and the principal said something really interesting that I take to heart, and I think every parent should take this on. He said, be very careful. Studies have shown that if you encourage your kid and say, I'm so proud of you for how smart you are, or for getting an A on the test, you know, basically, I'm proud of you for your result, kids will have more anxiety and fear because they've already hit this high level and you're proud about the result. And now they're worried, what if I don't get the result again? Instead of feeling good, now I feel like I'm stupid or I feel like I failed. So the best way to encourage, and I fully believe this, is to say, I'm proud of you for how hard you worked to get that A. I'm proud of you for how hard you worked to prepare for that play that you were in. And what's neat is whether they get the A or the D or they get the result or not, they're always going to focus on working hard and being disciplined. So I take that on too. And for myself, I say, I'm proud for working as hard as I have, but I'm grateful for the result that I've been given, if that makes any sense.
It makes 100% sense. And it's really interesting because I think this is really a really great topic, because people really struggle with the difference between being proud of something or feeling really good for, wow, I did this. I worked really hard. I made an impact. I'm living out my dream. I'm doing what I set out to do. And like, I'm really proud when someone comes up to me and says, wow, our family has done so much better this year. We were able to do this for our family because the things you've taught me have helped me so much. And I don't think, wow, I'm great. I think, wow, I'm glad I'm doing what I'm doing to help that person. And so there is a difference between being proud of your accomplishment or your hard work and being prideful, saying, it's me, I'm great. Oh, look at me, I'm great. And yet people really confuse those two things enough that I changed it in my question, because I used to say, and it's really funny that I did this today, and I don't think it's any coincidence, because in my notes and the questions I have in front of me, it just says something that is meaningful for you. Because I used to say, tell us about one of your greatest accomplishments or something you're proud of. And people, when they answered it, would completely go off on this tangent saying, well, I don't think it's right to be proud. And so I finally took it out of my questions and said, what do you find meaningful? And today I didn't. I just went back. I kind of just skipped back to when I had my original questions on here. But I'm glad that we did, because we got to have a really good conversation about it, and you answered it beautifully.
And look at what I did. I went off on the tangent of proud. How good is that?
But in a good way.
I think that's fun. I mean, that really is the thing I'm most proud of, honestly, is figuring out the distinction between that. Because in our businesses, like, you know, we have to be, you know, you and I, like, we're the face of this. We're the voice of this. And we have to be comfortable promoting ourselves. I mean, I got my face on mugs and stuff and banners, and it's like, that feels awkward if I just look at my humanness, you know? But when I look at the business, I have to be able to step out and say, what's right for this business? Well, if I'm the flag bearer, then I should be featured here. That's what people are looking for or expecting. So I should do that, because that's the right thing for the business. But equally, I'll tell you right now, like, if the smartest thing was to remove, I'm launching a new podcast for speakers, and that one, I think, you know, I'm not going to make me the highlight. I want to make the guest 100%, and it's not going to be about me at all. So I'm not having my face on there. I'm actually doing some imagery and graphics and everything, because it's going to be about the guest and about the listeners 100%. The first one has me, because it's more like, you know, the Tim Ferriss show, the Gary Vee experience. It's that kind of a thing. Sure. So it's about me interviewing people. So it's just interesting to have the distinction between where do you fit and where don't you, you know?
Right. So tell us about then a great challenge that you experienced and then how you worked through it.
So one of my hardest moments was I skipped over this part. So I was really successful early on, right, monetarily with real estate and all that. And then I essentially gave it up and I was a self-made millionaire by 25. By 26, I was broke and I lost $1.5 million and I was declaring bankruptcy. And the reason is I gave up on my existing business because I didn't have passion for it. Now, looking back now, I would have done it differently. I would have set up a transition plan, you know, to bring up coaching and then eventually exit, maybe sell the business. But I was just, you know, I was young and I just thought, you know what? I don't love this anymore. I'm not passionate. I want to do this. So fast forward, and I get this chance to go speak in Australia. Someone I met through the Tony Robbins groups ended up being one of the biggest seminar promoters there. So I contact this friend of mine. I said, hey, you know, I'm a speaker now. Maybe, you know, I could come out and speak at one of your events. And he, you know, replied back, well, let's get you in touch. And yeah, let's test you out as a speaker, and I'll get you in touch with our speaker person. And it took a couple of months, you know, working out the logistics. But the day finally came. It was August 2008. They said, come out and speak at this four-day event in Melbourne. And I said, how many people will be there? They said, oh, about 400. And I hadn't spoken in front of more than about four people at that point, including my parents, you know. And I'd put on my own little workshops, but they were big failures. You know, I had four people, six people, and nobody bought anything because I didn't realize that they'd actually want to invest in training when they go get trained, you know. So I'm in this place where I'm basically broke, more than broke. I borrowed money to get a plane ticket to get out to Australia. When I land there, I don't know anyone. I have negative in my business account and I'm negative in my personal account. And I share this because someone listening always goes, that's me, and like I relate. And I want you to know that if you're in that place, it sucks. But it can get better if you keep pushing. So I'm negative in both my accounts. I have $40 Australian money in my pocket and that's it. And I have nowhere to sleep that night. So unfortunately, that's a very true story. I go peek my head into the seminar to see what was going on. And there's all these amazing speakers, like mindset speakers that are like top of the top of the top in the country. I'm a mindset speaker that day as well. Mindset of wealth. How ironic is that?
Wow.
And I need to sell. They wanted me to sell a $5,000 product from stage after 75 minutes. And if you know anything about the speaking platform world, that's a pretty steep obstacle.
Yep.
Especially with someone with no experience. So I leave and I'm brokenhearted. I don't know what to do. So I walked by the sign that said hostels, $33 for a bed. Look at my pocket. I have $40. I've shared this story before. This is the moment when I walk in. Talk about being humbled. I walk in and talk to the lady. I said, I'll take one bed, please, in a shared backpacker room, you know. And she said, no problem. That'll be $53. And I was like, oh, okay. But I not that it's a big deal, but I thought it was 33. And she said, oh, it's 33, but there's a $20 refundable key deposit. Don't worry, you'll get it back when you check out, mate. And I had to look at her and say, I'm sorry, I can't afford the $20 refundable deposit. And I walked out. I didn't know what to do, so I got Chinese food because it was $7. It was hot, you know, lots of it. I figured the MSG would maybe keep me warm at night or something if I had to sleep on the bench. And, you know, that was this moment when I said, okay, this is it, Matt. Like, you know, rock stars always talk about this, you know, musicians and artists, they talk about the no plan B, and your parents always tell you what's your plan B because they're worried one day you're going to be in Australia sleeping on a bench with, you know, a stomach full of Chinese food and no money in the bank. Well, that's what plan B is about. So that was the moment when I said, I don't have a plan B anymore. I closed my earlier business. The next day I had to speak and it was either make it or break it. You know, if I make it, if I can somehow reach people in a way that they're inspired and they get the value and the resource that I'm offering to them and they get the idea that, hey, I want to learn this NLP stuff too. I think it can change my mind, change my life. I want to do it. Then I could actually fly home and have a place to sleep. And if I didn't do it, I didn't know what I was going to do. I literally didn't have money for cab fare back to the airport to get home. So I step on stage, 75 minutes, I open my mouth, and I just start talking. In fact, all my NLP training, because I did a lot of NLP speaker training, all of it just, it was weird. It was like magic. It all came out, and I started watching. I had this weird moment. I was watching myself speak. If like had that moment where it's like almost an out of body, like nothing weird or spiritual. It was just, I was somewhere else in my conscious mind and I just kept talking. And at the end of it, I sold $58,000 from that one talk and I was able to get home. I got invited back many times. I got to put on additional events in Australia. And you know, the next several years. That really launched the speaking career. The first 2 years were a struggle, making nothing, and then that was the definitive moment when, from that point forward, I never looked back and said, you know what, if I'm going to do what I'm passionate about, I'm going to find a way to be rewarded for the hard work and the passion I put into it. End of story. And I'm always, and today, no matter what new venture I do, I always find a way to balance those two things. The more passion I put in, the more value I drive in, I'm also going to receive the appropriate amount in blessing, and that's what I'm going to do. But that was, man, that was a hard moment.
I guess. Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that story. So often I ask people to share a story, and then they don't ever actually share a real story. And it's always fun because you're right. Somebody out there listening to this is saying, gosh, he's actually been right where I am. Or, wow, I can walk through this and get through on to the other side, or whatever the case is. But people relate to the stories and experiences that we've gone through. And we hope that we can impart just a little bit of knowledge or positivity to someone else's life. So what advice would you give to those wanting to be entrepreneurs?
Oh, what a loaded question.
I know. It's a big one.
So if you've never been an entrepreneur, the advice I really give is you got to stop and think about it. We already talked about counting the cost. But there's a lot of cost to count, and you know, I don't mean to be uninspirational or unmotivational, but man, I'd much rather be the guy in your life that says, hang on a second, just stop and let's really look at this to be clear. Don't, if you're only passionate but you don't have the training, you might want to go get the training first. If you don't know how to do accounting, you know, if your accountant is the only one who can count, you're gonna be broke. So I've learned along the ways, I need to learn how to do accounting. I need to learn about business licenses. I need to learn about HR and management and payroll. And there's so many pieces that you and even if, you know, you grow and you have someone do that, starting off, you're usually the one that has all the hats. Mm-hmm. I certainly was, you know. I started off with a employee roster of one, just me. And I had 14 hats. And then as it grew and I started, you know, I made my first, you know, $60,000, then I could say, hey, I could get a part-time person to help me and I'll take some of that revenue. But that's how I built, unless you're doing, you know, a funded startup. I think that's a different conversation. But most entrepreneurs, you know, we're in this world where it's like, hey, let's bootstrap it. We got this idea. Let's get it out. Lead with revenue. Let that revenue build up, and then you can use that to reinvest in the business with expenses or hires or whatever. Mm-hmm. But really just make sure, like, is this what you want? Consider if you're really made that way. You know, entrepreneurship in 2019, as we're recording this, it's not all, you know, hustle and money and freedom, because that's what you see on social media. You know, I love, you know, a Gary Vee, for instance, great dude. But, you know, a lot of that, the audience, they're in this world of like, hey, it's, and he doesn't have the same message, but they get the message of hustle and make money and it's freedom and it's life. And other people have mm-hmm. the lifestyle business. Lifestyle business is a crock. I really think it is. You know, the lifestyle business where, you know, you're sitting on a laptop for 30 minutes in Hawaii once a week, you know, and everything else is a party. I think we need to reevaluate what that means. So entrepreneurship is a hustle and it is a grind and it is hard work. But the question is, can you be passionate about the process? Can you, you know, I love the people I work with. I love when we have our Monday morning, you know, meetings over Zoom across the states. It's like, that's a cool thing because I like these people. And I like that I've given them an opportunity of a place to grow and expand and you know, and to make a difference together. I like going to my seminars and working. So just know, again, count the cost and know, are you really made to do this? Do you have a high risk tolerance? That's been a pretty important one. I haven't had a regular paycheck from anyone but myself in 16 years, but I'm okay with that. You know, early on, I'd go for months with no income and having expenses and going negative. But then the third month maybe was a big windfall. Are you willing to have the up and down? If that drives you nuts, not every human being is wired for that. Some people are wired to be a manager, leader of people type. Mm-hmm. That your biggest strength is taking somebody's vision. It's not sexy in social media. It's not sexy in the world to say, hey, I love being a number two person. I love taking someone else's vision and implementing it and running with it and being, you know, high paid in that capacity. No one wants to say that. You know, today everyone wants to, I run my own thing. But just, you know, really be real. Or do you want to run your own thing for real? because I'm a better visionary than I am implementer, let's be honest. So I bring on implementers to help me implement my vision. But some people are, in fact, better implementers. I can think of many people I've known over my life that struggle with like the creating the scraps of vision from the beginning. But if you give them a clear vision, they go, oh, they'll have the most beautiful thing done for you, you know, in a week or in a day, way better than I could ever do. So figure out how you're wired and what you really want to do. And if it's you, then roll up your sleeves, hustle, grind, go for it.
There are so many great points that you just made, and I couldn't agree more.
All over the place.
I know they were all over the place, but man, they were good. But there was one in there I think that is really important to also identify, and that is because I'm that person too, and I get really excited and I get really carried away, and I have to have not only the team that's going to implement it, but the details around it. So I just think big. I probably think way bigger than I need to sometimes. I don't ever think about, like, let's hit this little step first. I always see the end result of it, right? And they're the ones that bring me in and say, okay, wait a minute. How are you going to do that? Sometimes I get annoyed with them, but...
Who needs how? Just this is why. Let's
I know.
Do it.
But at the end of the day, those little details are the ones that make the thing come to pass. And especially in today's technology world, there was a little bit, there was ways to get around things in the old days. But in today's world, if people can't go on in order and push a button and get a result in literally 10 seconds without too much difficulty, you're going to get 1,000 emails and you're going to get 1,000 Facebook messages and, oh my gosh, I tried to order, but the link isn't working. And so, man, you better be thinking through all those little details as well. So you need those, you know, implementers, and you need those people if you're going to be that entrepreneur. But you're right. If you're not that person, then be okay with being where you are. And really, and it's really great too, I think, for those kinds of people is, you know, I try to empower my team, and I know that you do the same. I can tell by talking to you. But it's really good when you can work for someone like that. So maybe if you're not that number one person, but you're a number two person, then find a number one person that will allow you to shine as the number two person. And that is equally as important, is aligning yourself with really awesome people who are going to value you and really make you as an important person as a part of the team, not just that you're working for them.
Yeah, and if that, like, again, if that is you, even though it's not as quote-unquote sexy, like, you'd be okay with it. You can make a great living,
yeah,
a huge impact, supporting, you know, being, it's like that team, you know, my wife and I, like, we don't do the same things in our life and in our family, but we complement each other. And I always say it's like her and I going shoulder to shoulder, walking through life and saying, what are we put here to do together? And she has her part, I have my part, and we do that shoulder to shoulder together. It's not about, well, who's number one, who's number two.
Right.
And I think business is the exact same way.
I agree wholeheartedly. So share with us some new and exciting things that you're working on, and then tell our listeners how they can find you, Matt.
Oh, thank you, Belinda. You know, one of the most exciting things is, we talked about all this stuff going on, but this is exciting for me and also exciting for you listening is, I put my first new book in over 10 years. I wrote a book in 2007, and this is the first new book in over 10 years called The Firebox Principle. It took me 11 years to really be inspired enough by an idea that I thought, you know what, this is worth writing. And it is. There's nothing like it out there. It feels very much like a Malcolm Gladwell or a Seth Godin type of book, you know, one of those, you know, real easy read, but it's called The Firebox Principle, The 7 Drives That Fuel Every Entrepreneur. And I got really interested in origin stories. I love Marvel movies and, you know, all the superhero movies. And I've always been interested in the origin story. It's like every hero has an environment they walk through that molds and shapes the origin of how they became the superhero they became. Villains have the same one. And nowadays, you know, Marvel's doing a great job sharing the story of that even villains in their own mind often see themselves as heroes because every one of us has been shaped by something. So I looked at different entrepreneurs, visionaries, innovators, creators, artists, singers, songwriters. I mean, you name it, anyone in that space of, I have a vision and I want to create something. And I realized that every single person's story I read about or talked to, from today all the way to the past, they all had something in common, and every one of them fell into one of 7 different motivational drives. So the book is about getting what those motivational drives are. And when you understand the real reason, you know, I'll just tell you the seven real quick and not even get into them. Just, you know, let you hear the words. It's the significance drive, the need to be important, the artisan drive, because it's beautiful, the world impact drive, to make an impact in the universe, the contribution drive, which means it's all about the people, the spiritual drive, because my creator, because God said so, the thrive drive, which is about improving your station in life, whether it's getting out of poverty or getting into wealth or something. And then the last one is the Avenger drive, which is to take a wrong and make it right, to fix something. And every single person I found, whether it was a Steve Jobs or a Vince McMahon from the World Wrestling Entertainment, the billion-dollar pro wrestling company, to Rupert Murdoch, to Alexander Graham Bell, to James Dyson, to Elon Musk, every single person, their story fit into one of those seven, and it really blew my mind. So today, the reason I love it so much, and that's what brought me on. I was doing a book tour earlier in the year from August onwards. So I did a lot of speaking engagements, book signings, and then I went on six television shows and all over the radio. And people are resonating with it, because today it's not just about what you do for people. They call it the value proposition. Mm-hmm. People want to know why you do it. You know, Dollar Shave Club launched, just as an example. They're not in the book, but they launched and they said, hey, razors are too expensive. Here's a great monthly subscription. You know, it's a dollar a month or $9 a month, and you can get a great razor. That was a value proposition, right? Don't go to CVS anymore. Get Dollar Shave Club. Then Harry's razors came out, and they do essentially the same thing, but Harry's is successful because they launched with a story. Their story is Avenger Drive. They said, you know what? The razor industry has been taking advantage of people, and me and my friend, we're sick and tired of it, so we went out and created something fresh, and we're giving you the truth, and here is what you get. The exact same product, roughly, as Dollar Shave Club, but one of them had a value proposition that worked well. The new one took off because it had a story. Tom's Shoes, Blake Makowski, founded that because he had a story of contribution and wanting to shoe kids in Argentina and all over the world now that had no shoes. The story is what did it. So people want to know your origin story. So my advice to you is obviously read the book, but take that and ask yourself, where do you see yourself in this book? Which of these seven drives do you relate to the most? Most people relate to more than one. So I created something called the Firebox Quiz, which is super cool. You can take a free quiz once you buy the book, and then you can find out what's your primary drive, what's your secondary. And again, it's not a personality profile, Belinda. It doesn't tell you who you are. But you take the quiz in relationship to an enterprise or a vision you have, and it'll give you a good insight into the reasons why you're doing that vision, the reasons why you're implementing what you're doing. And you can do one of two things. You either get congruent with the mission and you go, yep, that's my story and that's who I am, and let's wave that flag with pride and show everybody. Or you realize, gosh, I thought this was a charity about people, but really I think the reason I'm doing this is because I didn't feel important as a kid and I want to do something significant. Nothing wrong with that. But you might need to shift your story and realize that you need to change things. So it's a great compass along the entrepreneurial journey to make sure you're pointing at true north.
Oh, that's awesome.
Good line, right? I just made that up.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I'm gonna do that myself. How's that?
Great idea. Yeah. And look, you can get it. I don't know if the publishers change. I went through a great publisher called Unprecedented Press. They donate a portion of their proceeds to Everyone Global Giving, taking care of orphans and widows and the disenfranchised. And then I donate a huge portion of author proceeds, almost all of it, to the Burn Institute in San Diego. I went to burn camp when I was 9. I burned my hand as a baby. And to watch that is so important. So the Burn Institute will send burn survivor children to burn camp for the summer. It's a camp called Beyond the Scars. It takes $1,000 to send a kid to camp. So through the book and then also through our seminars, so far in 2018, we sent, I think it was 11 kids to burn camp on full scholarships, donated $11,000 through our students and through the book sales. So when you get the book, you get a free quiz, you get a free $1,000 training where I teach you all about the book. And if you do it from the publisher at fireboxbook.com, you also are helping, of course, send the kids to burn camp, which is really cool. And you get the free quiz and the free training. So it's kind of a win all around, and you get to figure out a little more about who you are and why you do what you do. You can also, I don't know if they've changed the ebook price, but if you're strapped and you're bootstrapping your business, you can still grab the ebook from Amazon. It's probably at still launch price, very, very cheap. So grab that on Amazon too.
Okay, perfect. Well, Matt, it's been delightful having you as a guest today. Thank you so much for all of your nuggets of wisdom and your insightfulness. And it's been a real great pleasure chatting with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Belinda. Anytime. Love to maybe have you back on my show if you have time to. Certainly love to chat and reverse the roles a little bit. So let me know
if that works. I would love that. Now, interesting enough, so I caught part of this story. So are you in Michigan right now or you're just visiting here?
I'm in Michigan now, yeah. So we moved from Southern California to Grand Rapids, Michigan to help as volunteer leaders with our church. There's a hub out here of four different campuses. So my wife now go around to different campuses and help out. I'll preach on some Sundays and it's a phenomenal time. And we're out here for the duration. I'm not sure how long, but
because I'm outside of Ann Arbor. I'm close.
I didn't realize you were in the state.
Yeah, I was just in Grand Rapids like two weekends ago.
Oh, maybe we can get together when you're up next.
Yes, I would love that. And I'm leaving for Australia tomorrow.
Come on.
I know. How funny.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Brisbane, and then I'll be speaking on the Gold Coast at the convention center there.
Oh, that's phenomenal. Oh, well, say hi to the Gold Coast. I actually had an office in the Gold Coast. I ran all my advanced trainings up there down in Coolangatta, Southern Gold Coast.
Yeah.
And we do stuff in Broad Beach. Man, it is the place to be. Oh, I'm so jealous. Enjoy.
Thank you so much. I know it's going to be fun.
I'm looking out. The snow just got heavier and heavier. As you said, you're going to Australia. So I don't know what that means for me, but enjoy yourself.
Thanks so much, Matt.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com. And click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.